Are you struggling to cope with the menopausal side effects of breast cancer treatment? Or do you lie awake at night like me, tossing and turning as the sweat pours off your body? Maybe you wish there was something you could take when HRT is off the table. Well, today I'm going to answer all your questions about breast cancer treatment and the menopause with this week's guest, Professor Anise Mukherjee. She's a consultant endocrinologist, a menopause specialist, and the author of The Complete Guide to the Menopause. This is So Now I've Got Breast Cancer, the podcast for anyone who's just been diagnosed. I'm Dr. Liz O'Riordan, the breast surgeon with breast cancer, and I found out the hard way just how little I knew when I suddenly found myself in the chemo chair. It's why I wrote my book, The Complete Guide to Breast Cancer. There's a lot of bad information out there, and I want to guide you down the right path. So if you've got a question, this show will answer it for you. Now I'm going to let you into a confession. When I worked as a breast surgeon, I never told my patients how to handle the menopausal symptoms that were coming their way. And then I got breast cancer and chemo threw me into an instant menopause. I thought I'd wet myself when I had my first night sweat, and I get so many questions about how to cope. And that's why I had to get today's guest, Professor Anise Mukherjee, to help me answer them. She's a consultant endocrinologist, which means she's an expert on anything to do with hormones and women's health. And she's had years of experience helping women with breast cancer just like you. And if that's not enough, she's also one of us because Anise has had breast cancer herself. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. We're going to talk and talk and talk today. But before we get into the nitty gritty, could you tell us a bit about your own experience of breast cancer and the menopause?
Okay, so in 2011, I was a consultant endocrinologist at Salford Royal Hospital in the NHS, and I'd worked many years before that, for many years at Christie Hospital, which is a cancer hospital. I'd looked after many women who had gone through a breast cancer diagnosis, and I had a particular interest in helping women through a difficult experience after breast cancer and the consequences of treatment for breast cancer, including menopause. So that was my gig. That's what I did in my career. I also did lots of other hormone-related problems, but I had a particular interest in what we call late effects, which is the hormone effects after cancer treatment. And yeah, and in 2011, never ever thinking anything like that would happen to me, because none of us do, I found a lump in my breast. And I went to the breast surgeon, and who was a colleague of mine at Salford, and she said, I'm 99.9% sure this is going to be nothing. I was 41 years old, no family history, very fit and well. And it was cancer. And then, you know, as we all go through that early journey, which is incredibly hard because there's so many unexpected things happening, they were going to do my surgery. They had the date booked. Then when I went for a further ultrasound to look at my lymph nodes, they found a second cancer. So the surgery had to be cancelled and rescheduled. And I had to have major surgery and more investigations. I, you know, went through the journey that I'd, you know, managed so many patients going through and cared for so many patients. And nothing prepares you for that diagnosis, nothing. We all know that. And then after I had my treatment, they said, oh, it's early stage. It's early stage. You don't need any more treatment. And as an endocrinologist, as a hormone specialist, I was really fearful because I had estrogen positive breast cancer. And I was more frightened of recurrence, which I think many women aren't now because we're so good at curing cancer, but breast cancer can come back many years later. I was really fearful of having estrogen around, and I wasn't fearful of menopause because I'd helped so many women through that. And they ended up giving me chemical blocking therapy to push me into early menopause. So I went through menopause then, and I wasn't fearful because I had so much knowledge. And that was why I wrote my book, because I wanted to try and help women understand that if you understand, if you have applied knowledge and you understand what you're going through and you know the strategies you can use, it's less traumatic, it's less difficult. And that's for menopause during a cancer diagnosis and, you know, menopause for many women who aren't going through a cancer diagnosis, which can be difficult.
And I wish I'd read your book when I was diagnosed, because I was clueless. But for anyone listening, can you explain why the chemotherapy and the hormone blockers make us menopausal?
Well, chemotherapy is a toxic treatment. It's trying to kill cancer cells, but it often damages other things in the body. It damages all fast-growing cells. I mean, obviously, you lose your hair and things like that. But chemotherapy is very toxic to the ovaries. So in women, even younger women, much younger women going through chemotherapy, often their periods will stop. But when you're much younger, sometimes the periods come back. But if you're sort of in your 40s and your body was heading towards perimenopause anyway, chemotherapy is often that straw that breaks the camel's back and it stops the ovaries working altogether. And that's part, I mean, that's also thought to be part of why it's so effective for breast cancer, because it's killing the cancer cells, but it's also blocking the source of estrogen, which feeds cancer cells. Chemical therapy, which is what I had, which the sort of Zoladex treatment, is a chemical treatment that shuts the ovaries down. So it kind of works in a similar way to chemo on the ovaries, but it's not toxic elsewhere. So chemical menopause on its own without chemo isn't as bad as chemo. I didn't go through chemo because I wasn't deemed, you know, the right stage of chemotherapy. And then there are obviously medications that we use after the initial cancer treatment, like tamoxifen and aromatase inhibitors, and they block any last semblance of estrogen. So tamoxifen blocks estrogen in breast cells and breast cancer cells. So many women say they develop menopause symptoms with tamoxifen, and aromatase inhibitors are just taking away every last bit of estrogen around your body.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a real wake-up call when it happens to you. Now, I've got a voice note here from Claire, who sent this in to us.
My question is, if you are on hormone treatment and you don't actually have a huge amount of menopausal symptoms, does that mean that you have loads of estrogen still kicking about in your body? It's a concern of mine, so I was just wondering about that.
So I presume Claire means, when she says hormone therapy, she means hormone blocking therapy.
Like tamoxifen or aromatase inhibitors, yeah.
It's a great question, because there's a lot of talk about the severity of symptoms and side effects with, you know, chemotherapy, tamoxifen causing menopause symptoms. And many women do get really unpleasant effects. Probably up to 30% of women who are pushed into menopause through treatment will get severe symptoms. But actually, that means maybe up to 70% of women will get some symptoms, but not severely. And I think I was probably in a similar category to Claire. I didn't have no symptoms, but I got some sweats and flushes. I got sleep disturbance. I got the brain fog, which goes in that, it's classic in that, you know, early menopause phase. So I got those symptoms, but I was sort of similar to Claire. I thought, I'm not feeling ill enough. I should be feeling iller. But it's because everybody experiences menopause differently. It's a really unique experience. And if you're going through menopause during a cancer diagnosis, the stress around that cancer diagnosis can cause a lot of the symptoms. So if you're being supported well and you feel in control and, you know, maybe a bit of luck here and there as well, you don't get severe hot sweats and flushes, then no, not everybody gets severe symptoms. And it absolutely does not mean that the treatments aren't working. It's just sort of luck of the draw. Sort of, it's just one of those things. It may be that Claire's doing loads of things right in terms of her lifestyle and well-being that are helping her, you know, stay calm and not be too stressed. Stress is a horrible thing when you've got cancer diagnosis and menopause at the same time, because it's really difficult not to feel overwhelmed and stressed. And then the menopause symptoms reproduce that.
And we're going to come on to that. But let's start with, what are the typical side effects that a woman going through a cancer menopause might experience?
Well, the classic menopause symptoms that are tightly linked with the drop in estrogen are the vasomotor symptoms. And by that, I mean the hot sweats, flushes, night sweats, feeling, you know, that heat coming through.
I used to describe it like a reverse orgasm. You know, feel it rising up the body and you don't want it, but you know it's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. And then changes in the periods, obviously. So, you know, some women might, you know, have a no period. Some women will have a sudden torrential bleed. And then the vaginal symptoms, which are tightly linked with that drop in estrogen. So not every woman gets those either, but it can be dryness, soreness, pain, you know, discomfort, water infections. So those symptoms are very tightly linked with the drop in estrogen. And we do have treatments that can help with all of those, even if you can't have HRT. And then there are a lot of symptoms that overlap with the fact that you're going through a cancer diagnosis or the stress of life in general. So of course, if you're having terrible hot sweats at night, that impacts your sleep and it can make you feel fatigued and it can make you feel anxious and overwhelmed. It can make you hungrier during the day, crave carbs. So they can be indirectly linked with those hot sweats and flushes. But of course, you know, feeling exhausted, tired all the time is something that many adults, men and women of all ages, can get. Sleep disturbance, fatigue, overwhelm, anxiety, depression, they're not specific to menopause. And of course, if you're going through a cancer diagnosis, that's a major life event. So those symptoms might be related to your change in hormones, but they may also be related to everything around that, the overwhelming situation you're in.
I'd never thought about that. So everything that you may blame on the menopause could just be due to the fact that you're dealing with a cancer diagnosis, you've had treatment, you're juggling a family and a job. And I guess changes in our lifestyle might be a factor in it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, those symptoms can be due to other things. They may be due to menopause. And it's quite helpful to just understand that some symptoms link tightly with menopause, but you might have some symptoms you're blaming on menopause that aren't menopause. You know, they may be linked to other things. And yeah, lifestyle is interesting because for the whole of society, lifestyle is more adverse today than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. Midlife women are highly much more likely to be employed. So they've got, you know, a job, which adds stress. But there's lots of other things. There's care roles for elderly relatives. There's, you know, less time for exercise because we're all so busy. We're using phone devices. Everything that comes through devices on the phone, every piece of news you see, it's all bad. It's all stress. We're more sedentary. Our diets are not as good, I'm afraid, across the board, because even food that is marketed as healthy is often very unhealthy. So our lifestyles start to deteriorate from adulthood all the way through our adult life. And then it kind of gets to that point where you then go into menopause and you can't get away with those sort of unhealthy lifestyle habits anymore. We blame everything on menopause when actually we've been building up problems like weight gain, gradual weight gain over 20 years, lack of physical activity, you know, poor sleep habits, which then when, as soon as your estrogen drops, that can make your sleep worse. So it's kind of a combination of not just lifestyle at that point, suddenly when you hit 45 or 50 or go through a cancer diagnosis, but it's something we've been building over our whole adult life.
So before we even think about talking about drugs to help, it's looking at your lifestyle and thinking, can you sleep better, sleep hygiene, better diet, exercising, just to help everything really?
Yeah, and I completely know that a lot of people, when you mention lifestyle, particularly in the middle of a cancer diagnosis, they'll roll their eyes up because they'll go, are you kidding me? You want me to start building up my exercise when I'm feeling exhausted? So but there are barriers to that. And what I would say is, you know, when you get diagnosed with cancer, thank goodness, the vast majority of women going through breast cancer will survive it now, which it wasn't the case 40 years ago. So what we need to think is look at the long game and look at tiny changes, because tiny steps every day add up over months and years to you feeling better, your health being better. You're reducing your risk of recurrence because lifestyle approaches are proven to do that as well. So it's really about thinking about lifestyle as a long game and just being aware of it, not beating yourself up and thinking I'm going to start going to the gym when you're exhausted, but just being aware that it's going to make a difference. We all want a miracle cure for symptoms. And I think the thing about, well, we'll talk about HRT, but HRT is being promoted inappropriately as a miracle cure on social media. And it isn't a miracle cure, because I see women, the commonest reason for women seeing me in my clinics are ongoing symptoms despite HRT. And that's why I'm so hyper aware, because those women get better when I address the other things in their life, you know. And so I think if you're going through a cancer diagnosis, you think, but I can't have the miracle cure because I want HRT and I'm being told I can't have it. And that would make me feel better. And in some ways, you can always get a placebo effect if you try it, because you think this isn't going to be an amazing treatment and you feel relief of being empowered by being able to have it. But it's a false economy, because actually a lot of women then say, well, it worked for a while and now it's not working. And that's a placebo effect. And it doesn't cure all of those other things. It won't cure poor sleep hygiene. It won't cure chronic stress. It won't make you lose weight if you've got 20 years of gradual weight gain. That it's tough, but lifestyle is important. And I can't not emphasize that.
It's like that 1% rule, just be 1% better every day. It's microdosing your lifestyle, tiny, tiny changes that can help.
It's a bit like, you know, people take statins. Most people have heard of statins. And people are given statins if they've got very high cholesterol, high risk of heart disease, and it's a preventative treatment. But actually, lifestyle is a preventative treatment with no risk. It's not a tablet. It's free most of the time.
Yeah. But moving on to some of the symptoms, Emma, Karen and Louise are all struggling with joint pain and feeling like they're 100 years old. Is there anything that can help with that part of the menopause?
So again, there's lots of different things. Every single woman is different in the cause of her pain. So if you're on aromatase inhibitors, they will generally increase aches and pains. So if it's absolutely unbearable, then it's sometimes worth having a chat with your cancer doctors, your cancer team, to see if you can either have a drug holiday or a switch to tamoxifen if that's possible. Because although aromatase inhibitors are preferred, if the symptoms are so awful that your quality of life is seriously impaired, it's worth discussing that with your cancer team. If the aches and pains are, you know, not related to the aromatase inhibitors or any other treatment, often again, you know, you go through cancer treatment, you're not moving very much because, especially with chemotherapy, you know, it depletes you. It's so paradoxical. The less we move, the more we ache as we get older. And the people with the least aches and pains are the people with the strongest muscles, because as your muscles get weaker, they get filled with scar tissue, basically. We call it disuse atrophy, but it's muscles being infiltrated with scar tissue. So then when you move, the muscles find it harder. So again, building up movement in, again, microdosing is really helpful. Not necessarily exercise if you're in severe pain, but just small movements, stretching, sit to stand, walking around the room or going outside for a bit of fresh air and stretching. Anything is better than nothing, but don't try and do loads. Just make tiny changes every single day, and that makes a difference. And then if you've got a lot of pain, there are medications that can be used to help with pain management. Also, things like cognitive behavioral therapy type approaches. I know it sounds strange, but these work for lots of physical illnesses, including pain type problems. So it's sort of holistic, really, the management of pain. And sometimes tweaks in medication can help, but almost always doing nothing makes it worse. And tiny movements does not make it worse, but over time will help.
And I found that too. You get so stiff and sore if you're not moving. But now onto one of the banes of my life, hot flushes and night sweats. Grania asked us if they'll ever go away. Can we get rid of them? Are there any drugs that can actually help?
Yeah, so about 80% of women will get them. But for about 25 to 30% of women will get them severely. So it's like wrenching. It's like you say, you think you wet yourself, and actually it's just a complete sweat everywhere. And it can be really disabling day and night. And so for those women who need treatment, there are things available. So there's lots of little lifestyle hacks that you can do. You know, wearing thin cotton clothing in layers, don't wear turtlenecks, keep your upper chest clear. I know that sounds obvious, but sometimes you don't think. You put a nice outfit on and then you're absolutely overheating. And once the sweat starts, very disabling. Keeping your room temperature cool. Some people like carrying fans around. You know, these are little tiny tweaks that you can do that just reduce the severity when they actually occur. At work, desk fans or air conditioning, all sorts of different things you can use. Avoiding hot drinks and spicy food because they bring on sweats. Cold showers. There's lots of data on cold water immersion helping with menopause symptoms, including the heat sensitivity symptoms. So a cold shower at night is a thought. If you get a lot of night sweats, it can cool your body right down. So that's the practical things that you can do for yourself. And there are quite a lot of different things. And then there are medications. There's lots of medications that can be used to help with those hot sweats and flushes. So the choice of medication will kind of depend on you, what specific signature of symptoms you have, and what other medication you're on, because tamoxifen can interact with some other medications that we use for sweats and flushes after a breast cancer diagnosis. So venlafaxine is one of the drugs in very low doses. It's actually a type of antidepressant. It works on noradrenaline and serotonin in the brain. And in a non-antidepressant dose, in a very, very tiny dose, it can really reduce hot sweats and flushes. And it's been proven in research studies in women with breast cancer. But it also reduces anxiety and can help with sleep. So if it works for you, it's great. I have patients. Some of them love it. Some hate it. And there's a whole load of other medications, from oxybutynin, which is a bladder treatment. So if you need to go to the toilet a lot and you're having urgency, it also reduces sweats. So that fits for some women, and some women love it. And some say, I tried that and it's awful. The same, I gave a talk the other day and I mentioned clonidine.
I've had that.
To be honest, it can cause your blood pressure to drop. It can make you feel dizzy. It can make you feel tired. So it's not for everybody. Clonidine's a bit like Marmite. But for my patients who have high blood pressure, and it's good for migraines, clonidine as well. So if you've got migraines, high blood pressure, sweats, it fits really well in very low dose for some people, not in high dose. So there's lots of different treatments. And of course, if the listeners are thinking, well, I've tried that and it didn't work, that's why we have a whole range of treatments. And of course, we've got a brand new treatment, which is now licensed in America. It's called fezolinetant, and it is targeting the menopause symptom mechanism in the brain. It's incredible. It's a first in class. I've never seen any development like it in my 30 plus year career. It's being looked at by NICE at the moment. It's going to be really expensive, so it's going to be a while. But to have hope, I think, is brilliant, because it works for hot sweats and flushes quicker than HRT does, and it helps with sleep, energy, mood, and even weight balance. So it's got some incredible effects, and it's minimal in side effects. It's a tablet treatment. So, you know, that is a game changer. And I've seen all the data, and the data look incredible. And because of the way it works, we don't foresee that it's going to suddenly have side effects. We've got 52-week data, very clear data already from all the research studies. So that is really hopeful for the future for any woman who's struggling and who's trying different things and they're not a great fit, because that will be available, you know, in the near future.
Wow. That is amazing. We'll put details about that in the show notes. But you mentioned mood, and Tony sent us this voice note.
My question is about mood swings and irritability during menopause. I notice that sometimes my mood can be a little erratic. I snap at my husband. I'm irritated with my family at times. And I find that it's something beyond normal, everyday frustration. Is there anything I can do to help me deal with that? I feel I'm becoming a different person during menopause, especially after having undergone treatment for stage 2 ER positive breast cancer. Thank you.
Yeah, and I'm sure many of the listeners will really relate, because in midlife, all of us are under a lot of pressure. And I don't apologize for bringing the P word up, because pressure is there for everybody, but for women in midlife more than for anyone else, I'm afraid, today, because we are more overcommitted than any other generation. No matter what anyone says, people will say, well, 30 years ago, women didn't have the washing machines and the car, you know, but actually, women are under more pressure today. And I know that. I see women, you know, in my clinics, I can't believe what women do and what they take on. And, you know, men take on a lot. Men have always taken on the work and everything, but now women have got the work and all the home stuff. So the pressure, then the menopause, then a cancer diagnosis. And what I see again and again are two things in relation to the symptoms, the mood swings that your listener was talking about. Overcommitment, so there's no downtime, and lack of self-compassion. So when you do lose your rag, you then self-loathe and you feel awful. And so the mood swings are very frequent, I think, across the board. And when you've had a cancer diagnosis, you know, that's different again. If you apply some self-compassion and some self-care, and it sounds so nebulous, but if you just give yourself a little bit of self-care, you won't be as irritable. You just won't. Everything will be better. And people then say to me, I don't want to be selfish. I've got to look after everybody else. And I say that's exactly the reason you need self-care, because you can only look after everyone else if you're looking after yourself, especially when you're going through the cancer diagnosis and all of that. Now, of course, if it's severe, and you know, mental health issues are escalating across the board in our modern society because of the pressure that everybody's under, and many other things as well, that there are medications. And if you're, I think there's a real stigma about sort of antidepressant type medication, in that I see, you know, women going, well, I don't want to be given antidepressants because I'm not depressed. It's my midlife, my menopause, my cancer diagnosis. But if you could take a treatment and it lessened those symptoms and it made you kind of feel less guilty to just look after yourself a bit, it could be transformational. You're not weak if you take an antidepressant. You're trying to sort your health out. And certainly, as I mentioned, venlafaxine, but there are other very low dose antidepressants that that you can use that they're not really as strong, and they're not going to make you feel numb. They're not in low doses. They're just going to kind of make you feel a little bit calmer and maybe a bit of more objective and more productive, actually, because you'll feel better. So I'm not saying everyone needs antidepressants. I think everyone listening needs to apply more self-care, more self-compassion. Also, exercise gives you the euphoria. So movement, exercise, doing something that you enjoy gives you the endorphins. And that is a great mood regulator because it's helping with the stress. This feeds into the lifestyle. Eating better helps with your mood. Moving more, outside fresh air. Mindfulness approaches, CBT, can be really helpful for your mood. So not quick fixes, but nothing is a quick fix, really. Things can sound like a quick fix, but all those strategies are going to help. It's not a one size fits all, and you need to kind of find what works for you, really.
I think the lesson I'm hearing is we need to be kinder to ourselves. I mean, for goodness sake, we've had cancer. We need to give ourselves a break. And I've been on antidepressants for years because cancer can cause depression and anxiety that can kick in years down the line. And there is nothing wrong in having them, and they wouldn't keep me going. But a couple of my followers have talked about something else, which is really hard. The menopause and the drugs cause hair thinning and hair loss. And it can be really distressing when you're young. Is there anything we can do to help with that or prevent it?
Well, obviously, if women who are going through chemotherapy are likely to lose their hair, even if they have a cold cap, they're going to get thinner. There's not a lot of really high quality research data on this. So the caveat here is I'm going to be giving you my personal clinical experience advice rather than saying this trial showed this and that trial showed that. Because there are medications that can be used for hair loss, but generally speaking, we avoid them early on after a cancer diagnosis. So a few things. Stress makes hair loss worse. So again, that goes back into the self-care, self-compassion, reducing the stress, doing the exercise. That's all quite important. To actually help with the hair cycle, because you need micronutrients. Certain micronutrients are very important for the healthy hair growth. Things like zinc, selenium, iron, some of the B vitamins, so biotin, for example. They're very important. And if you're going through cancer treatment, if you're exhausted and if you're stressed, you don't necessarily absorb those micronutrients as efficiently as you would do if you were otherwise fit and well. So if you've got less of those and you're under stress and you know you're going through menopause and the menopause hormone changes can cause hair loss cycles as well, taking a supplement with vitamins and minerals in it. And you know, sometimes you can just go and get the hair and nail one from Boots or Tesco because they have the biotin, zinc, selenium, iron. If you think you might be anemic, you might need prescription iron because obviously if you're having heavy periods or you've gone through chemo and you're anemic, that can all make things worse. Hair loss during that phase is usually time limited through the menopause transition. Some women, you know, after they've gone through menopause will say, my hair's not as thick as it was when I was in my 20s. Some women have amazing hair and it's amazing all their life. And some women will notice slightly thinner hair as they get older anyway. And it can be a little bit abruptly worse after the menopause transition. But what doesn't happen is you just don't get thinner and thinner and thinner and then go bald. That's not how it works. Total alopecia is different. And stress makes hair loss worse. So I've seen many women through my career in my clinics where they haven't had a hormone problem and they've come specifically regarding hair thinning and is it hormonal? And the stress of seeing that hair in the bath plug when you've washed your hair and, you know, I've had women bringing their hair in saying, look how much I'm losing. That creates huge amounts of stress and that stress triggers it. So understanding it's not going to go on forever. There are things you can do, but the hair cycle is several months. So whatever you do now, you won't see any rewards for 6 to 9 months. And if your hair is falling out now, it's what happened 6, 9, 12 months ago. That's apart from chemo, obviously.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you. Now, we mentioned supplements, and I think most cancer patients should take a general multivitamin tablet because we don't eat well during cancer. Your taste changes really, really hard. But I've had a lot of women tell me to take sage or black cohosh or ginseng, all these things they've seen online. And we had a voice note come in from Joanne about this.
I'd like to ask, what sort of remedies or supplements can you take for menopause? I can't seem to find a chemist that will commit to confirming whether or not any of the ones that are out there contain hormones, things like menopause, etc. So any advice on what we can take to reduce hot flushes, etc. would be massively appreciated. Thanks.
So there's a double question there, isn't there? Because there's, as yeah. you said, about well-being, energy, hair, nails, skin. You want to make sure your micronutrients are optimized. But then the second bit of that question is supplements for hot sweats and flushes, black cohosh, red clover, you know, the phytoestrogens. You know the answer to this as well as I do, probably better, Liz, because I know you researched it very recently. So you can add. But what I would say is I wouldn't take anything really without speaking to the cancer team, because a lot of those treatments, we just don't really know what's in them. And some of them definitely contain some sort of hormonally active things like the phytoestrogens. So you need to be very, very cautious. I am a big advocate of sort of an A to Z vitamin and mineral. So if you've got a supplement that you can look at the ingredients, and if it's literally just got your 20 plus vitamins and minerals that are essential, you can't make those in your body. So you have to get them from food. And if you're not eating a balanced diet, and no, you shouldn't be beaten up by not wanting to eat a balanced diet when you're going through chemo or you're stressed, you know, but you do need to make sure you're getting those essential minerals and vitamins in. So, you know, if you're concerned, speak to your cancer team, and Liz can add to this. But I think the standard A to Z that haven't got the added query ingredient, some of them have added ingredients. So if it says over 50 or women's health, you just got to be a bit careful. The standard A to Z should just be vitamins with minerals. And I'm quite an advocate of those for general energy, well-being.
Yeah. And I would say your cancer team probably haven't heard of half the menopausal supplements that are now being sold at the moment, because we don't use them, we don't take them, we honestly don't know. And a lot of them will say, ask your doctor, there's a caveat, well, is it going to be bad for your health? The thing with tamoxifen is there are some supplements that can interact with it and stop it working, like black cohosh, like St. John's wort. So I think you need to be really, really careful. And you have to do your homework. And I'll put a link to a website in the description from MSK, which is really good at checking if something interacts with the tablets you're on. But if you're having a multivitamin and a good diet, you really shouldn't need them.
Yeah, and I would add, black cohosh can also cause liver problems. And
yeah.
St. John's wort interacts with a lot of medication. So I would really steer clear of anything like that, certainly in the first phase of all your cancer treatment, and always speak to your doctor.
Yeah. Now, we've talked a bit about HRT, and Anise and I have talked a lot about this off air. If you believe everything you read online, then HRT is a saviour for every woman going through the menopause, and it stops you dying from dementia and osteoporosis. And I've had a lot of angry, scared women like you listening in the breast cancer community, terrified we're going to die of a heart attack because we're not having HRT and our lives are going to be over. And I think it's important that people with breast cancer understand why they can't have HRT and what it can and can't do. Can you touch on that a bit for us, Anise?
Well, no international reputable impartial menopause society recommends HRT after breast cancer diagnosis. And that includes estrogen triple negative breast cancer, because those cancers can still come back as an estrogen positive cancer, or you can get a second primary that can be positive. So that is the guidance. And that's based on a lot of scrutiny of all the research data in a balanced way, looking at all the data. Now, over the last couple of years, there has been a huge amount of social media influencing with completely contradictory opinions that I've looked and scrutinized, as Liz has, at justification for saying actually it's probably fine to take HRT after breast cancer. And it's all flawed. It's all conflicted and it doesn't add up. And I have got 30 plus years of experience. I've got an MD. I've done loads of research. I can scrutinize research studies. If I believed I was going to be better off from a heart disease, osteoporosis, dementia perspective with HRT, you know, I would take it. I've had early stage breast cancer, actually. You know, if I thought it was going to prevent me having diseases, I would take it. I'm the best person to advise. The people online who are suggesting it's safe have got significantly less credentials than Liz and me, right? And we're not out of date. We are literally scrutinizing everything in the here and now, as are all the other experts. The thing is, this whole commentary about HRT being safe is just, well, that's just flawed. And then the commentary that HRT prevents dementia, heart disease, and whatever else, it's guesswork, because we don't have those data at all. In fact, some of the data, well, most of the data is either neutral or it suggests an increased risk of dementia in people receiving HRT. And I think there was one study that was highly flawed from America that said, oh, bioidentical HRT reduces risk of dementia. That was in a group of women who were highly selected, who had zero risk of heart disease. And heart disease is the biggest predictor of dementia risk. And it wasn't actually published in a peer-reviewed, very good journal because it wasn't quality. We talk about peer review because to get into a good journal, it has to be high quality. And it was just thrilled. It was meaningless, actually. But it's being promoted on social media. And unfortunately, women looking at social media believe it because it looks like a glossy ad almost, a glossy headline. This will prevent dementia. It's the absolute nonsense that HRT prevents dementia. All we know is nothing. We know nothing. But what we do know, and I'll go back to this, and I don't apologize, lifestyle, exercise, good whole food diet, social network, stress management, good sleep quality, all of those are absolutely proven to reduce dementia risk.
And heart disease.
And heart disease, yeah, and osteoporosis, you know, the whole shebang, you know. So, but again, you want to take a pill to prevent a disease.
Because it's easy. Getting your trainers on and actually cooking your own food. And I understand that, but it doesn't do what we're being told it does.
It's fake news. It's misinformation at its worst. It's disinformation, really. And there are many women who are going on HRT who don't have risk factors for the wrong reasons. And, you know, those women may be some of the women in the next 10, 20 years who some of those may come to harm from going on HRT for the wrong reasons. HRT is a helpful treatment for menopause symptoms if it's safe. But for many women I treat with HRT, it's not a miracle cure. I really cannot emphasize that more. In a way, I'm privileged to see that every single day in my clinic, I see women who have tried six different types of HRT and they're not feeling better. So this whole nonsense, and I see thousands of women and I'm not in some private clinic with a brand that's trying to promote a private treatment. I'm in the real world. It's kind of cold face. And so it's not a miracle cure. So
it's not.
First of all, it's not a miracle cure. Second of all, it's not safe if you've had a breast cancer diagnosis. The only caveat to that, vaginal estrogen is often okay. It's not the same as systemic HRT. And there's quite a lot of accumulating data on vaginal estrogen after breast cancer treatment, because those are symptoms that are very bothersome for many women. And you need to discuss it with your cancer team. But the cancer teams that I work with at the Christie Hospital are generally very happy for patients to have vaginal estrogen.
Yeah. And that's, so we're talking about systemic HRT. Vaginal estrogen, we know it's safe to give for women on tamoxifen. We think it's safe to give to women on aromatase inhibitors. And I'm going to do a whole episode on that later. A year's worth of vaginal estrogen is the same as one HRT tablet. And I think that is a complete game changer and everyone should be allowed to have it. And I think HRT can be used as a very, very last resort if women are really, really struggling, particularly with their mental health, and they've tried all the other things, dose reduction, they've had a treatment break if needed. But it's not safe because if your cancer is sensitive to estrogen, that means estrogen gets your breast cancer cells to grow. And even though it's been removed and you've had all the treatment, there can be breast cancer cells floating around the body just sitting there. And that bit of estrogen that you're getting from HRT could make them wake up, start to find a friend and grow, because breast cancer can come back 20 or 30 years in the future. And that's why we don't think it makes sense to give HRT. But I hope we've put that one to bed for now. Anything else you want to say on that?
Well, I was going to say, I see many women in my clinics who have had breast cancer, who've been struggling, who want to discuss whether or not HRT would be helpful for them. And I would tell you that in the, you know, 99.9% of cases, we will discuss treatment options and we will find treatment options that work without HRT. And I also see women coming to see me who have been given HRT by other clinics, or, you know, who've been given it relatively flippantly, being told it's probably fine. And then they're concerned. And actually, the majority of patients say, well, I thought it helped a bit at the beginning, but it's not really made a difference. The thing is, you can feel empowered because you're given a treatment you think is going to be a miracle cure. So you can feel a relief initially, but it's not safe. It has to be a really detailed discussion to make sure you are aware of the risks down the line and whether you're willing to take those risks and if it's really worth it and if you've explored all the other options. And generally speaking, the answer is generally no.
yeah, it's not safe and we don't recommend it.
I think the problem at the moment, Liz, that I'm seeing, and I mean, some of your listeners might relate to this, is that they are being, it's like a hard sell. You will be fine. Don't worry. It's absolutely safe. And they're not counseled properly. We call it informed consent.
And we're not collecting the data, are we?
And there's no data collection. So it will take us decades to see an increased recurrence rate. But I know my oncology colleagues across the country are getting lots of women saying, I know that HRT is safe. Why don't you let me have it? And it's misinformation. And so if you're being fed misinformation, that isn't informed consent. You're not being given all the facts.
Great advice there. Now, I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours, and I'm sure we're going to have to get you back. But my one takeaway from this is self-care and be kinder to myself. And I will tell my husband I've been told, no, I'm not going to cook your dinner tonight. And he said, I'm going to go and have a bath and read a book. Have you got three little tips you could give our listeners just to help them cope when life just get really hard?
Well, that's number one, self-care, self-kindness, self-compassion. So a bit of downtime, even if it's 5 minutes, you know, here and there, very, very powerful for well-being, stress relief. The second tip is that this storm is temporary. You know, going through a cancer diagnosis and cancer treatment is a very tough gig. And again, that feeds into why you need to be so kind to yourself, because not everyone has to go through that, and it is a really tough gig. So it's temporary. It's a big deal for you. It's a big deal for your mind, for your body. Once the treatment is over, that storm subsides and you will get your life back at some point. And that's it's really important to understand that there is light at the end of that tunnel. And then thirdly, and I don't apologize for saying this because I say it all the time and I think everyone's rolling their eyes up at me, is that lifestyle hacks are an investment in your future. Your future health, your future symptoms, reducing your cancer recurrence, you know, well-being. Results don't work overnight. It's a long game, but you will reap the reward. Just tiny, tiny changes in the right direction continuously. You know, you don't need to climb the mountain all at once, just a few steps here and there. And in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, you'll be in a different place.
Brilliant. I can't wait to hear what you're all doing to change your lifestyle today. And thank you so much, Denise, for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure.
That was Professor Anise Mukherjee, and I have to thank Anise for sharing her breast cancer story with us. And it's been so refreshing to hear that there are lots of things we can do to help with the menopausal symptoms, and that most of them don't involve swallowing another tablet. I know how little time surgeons and oncologists have to tell you how to cope. And I wish everyone being started on hormone blockers could listen to what Anise had to say. Thank you so much for all your questions. We've had so many, and I'm really sorry if I couldn't get yours in. If you found this episode useful, make sure you share it with everyone you know who could do with hearing it too. And I also want to give a shout out to Maggie Centres, who have just started running menopause workshops to help you cope. I think the take-home message for me is that it does come down to lifestyle. And as Anise said, making those tiny changes on a daily basis to how we eat, sleep, and exercise will make a huge difference down the road to our quality of life. And I know it's hard to do, but I really think we're worth it. And now it's time for our poem of the week from Donna Ashworth, our podcast poet. If you haven't come across Donna yet, her brilliant new book, Wild Hope, is full of inspiration and joy. And today's poem is no exception.
And on we go. There is much power in the phrase, and on we go. We break and rebuild, knowing we will break again. We lose, but we still love, though we know that pain won't end. We struggle along alone, yet we stop along the way to help another stand to see a brighter day. No matter what we have faced in this life, no matter how hard we have smashed against the rocks, we wash up, we shed tears, we wail to the skies, we let go, we rest, we brush down, we shake off, and on we go.
I always start to smile when I hear Donna read to me, and that was On We Go from her new book, Wild Hope. If you want to read more of Donna's poems, or find out more about Dr. Anise Mukherjee and her brilliant book, The Complete Guide to the Menopause, or send me a question for the show. You'll find all the details in the show notes. Next week, I'll be talking about how important exercise is after a breast cancer diagnosis with one of the world's leading experts, Professor Katherine Schmitz from the University of Pittsburgh.
What can I do to increase the likelihood that I come to the other side of this as whole as I am right now? And one of the most powerful things that anyone could do in that stretch of time between the diagnosis and the first treatment is a strong program of exercise.
I'm Dr. Lisa Reardon. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week. So Now I've Got Breast Cancer is produced by Birdline Media.